Recording.
All right.
Cool.
What's going on, everybody?
This is I gotta get a system down pack so I can do it. You got it fresh off the bat. So go ahead.
I got you. What's going on, everybody? This is Mike Bennett and Mike Baker coming at you with the very first episode of the Microsoft Recap. So just giving a little bit of backdrop of the things that we talk about here, our background. He is in the tech industry. I'm in the tech industry as well. We met each other through college, and we found this void that we needed to fill with disseminating information and news to the people with our criticisms, our ideas, and our thoughts on different things happening within the tech industry. And in this show, we'll be focusing on a lot of the nitty-gritty, the things that goes on week by week with dealing with Microsoft. So this is the very first episode. I'm excited to jump into it. What we will be doing is going over, most of the time, three strong topics, three articles that we come across that we like to discuss, that we feel like we want to bring it to the people and get your ideas, your thoughts on it as well, and just give you an honest commentary of how we feel about these topics that influence us, impact us, as well as how it impacts you. So I'm pretty excited to jump into it.
Yeah, most definitely. Let's start off with the first topic. Microsoft wins the Pentagon $10 billion Jedi contract for war cloud project, outbidding Amazon. War cloud project, basically, they have a cloud offering. Amazon, Microsoft, and Google are like the dominant three in this arena when it comes to cloud platforms. And the idea of what the cloud is, we can elaborate on that, but ultimately the Pentagon has decided to go with Microsoft opposed to going with Amazon or working with Google. I think actually Google backed out of the contract because they had some issues with their employees not agreeing to wanting to work for the government. They was like, yeah, we don't want to work with them. So we don't like, because you know, a large portion of Google's employee base anyways are foreigners, are from other countries, not American, and they didn't like the way that they dealt with the whole migration issue back then when Trump first got in office. I mean, so they kind of didn't want to deal with that, along with like just other issues, because you know, Google is, Microsoft and Amazon are great companies, but Google is a magic company when it comes to software, and like they have some software offerings when it comes to like vision APIs and stuff like that. The audit, what is it, the natural language APIs, artificial intelligence, machine learning, stuff like that. Google is the dominant player when it comes to those.
They're definitely leading the pack when it comes to that. It makes me think too, like just reading a little bit of reading in the article, but just looking at the title, what I feel would happen here, man, is that it went with what they feel like the longer lasting brand is. Because we all know that Amazon, although they are a titan of a company, just how much they run the world, as far as the staying power, we know that Amazon is not going anywhere, but Microsoft has been around longer.
Right.
And Microsoft, I think, has been a little bit more involved in government projects than any other titan tech company.
Yeah, Microsoft has been working with the government since like the early 90s, if not the late 80s. Like basically once Windows came out, they basically been having contracts.
Right.
It's just like since the beginning of Microsoft, basically they've been having government contracts, and like right, they know how to do that type of dealing. And when it comes to enterprise in general, like enterprise networks, anything in that realm, it's been Microsoft for the longest time. Linux is big, but like Microsoft is dominated when it comes to like office infrastructure and like working with people in an office setting for managing and storing and like having private networks of digital information, of private confidential information. Like they've had a lot of hacks also, but that's been part of it. They've worked through resolving those hacks. They know how to deal with it better than anybody else on those plays. And like, I mean, there's issues. Like I said, like Google has all that AI stuff, and like working with somebody like the government and having to have those dealings is kind of a problem. Amazon is kind of, I mean, they are the biggest player when it comes to cloud right now, because they got Amazon Web Services, and they're the largest platform right now. But I feel like there's still a conflict of interest when it comes to managing. Like, I mean, they said that they have other services that they manage with Amazon, which is part of the reason. I think there was another article, and it might actually be later in this article too, that Amazon was talking about potentially filing a suit against the fact that the government went with Microsoft, because the government assumed that they were, I mean, Amazon assumed that they were going to get this contract, that it was almost certain that they was going to get this contract, because they got other contracts with Amazon. And it was like, you know, Microsoft got other contracts with the government as well. Google has, and they not really, I don't know if they can really win a lawsuit in that manner, like which platform we're going to go with. More than likely in the future, they'll probably end up actually going with both, because just like private companies, they don't use one system. Some people start off with like Microsoft Azure and use their cloud platform, but then eventually they go with Amazon Web Services also. And just like you say, diversify your bonds. Like they try to diversify their resources, and they don't want to just rely on one company. So more than likely they will still be using Amazon Web Services as well as Microsoft's platform. But I mean, for the most part, this particular cloud infrastructure, they're going with Microsoft building it out for them. And I mean, essentially what this is like they're building a separate cloud. They're building a separate cloud system. I mean, just listen. I mean, I don't know if any potential listeners, like, just so you understand the concept of the cloud, just to get.
You break the cloud down. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. I mean, just to get it in your head with how, I don't want to get too detailed with it. I don't want to go into the specifics about infrastructure as a service and all that stuff. But like, essentially, there are thousands of data centers everywhere. I work with Amazon Web Service. I work with Google Cloud and Amazon Web Service heavily. Google themselves has about 7,500 data centers. That's 7,500 data centers around the world. Amazon, being larger than them, has more than 7,500 data centers. Microsoft has a lot of fucking data centers around the world, and all of these data centers are interconnected. In companies like Google's case, like they spent a lot of money on networks and getting all of those data centers connected to each other, so that they are essentially hardlined by fiber optic cables connected to each other. And essentially, you have, once with software on top, you are allowed to use all of those resources of all of those data centers at any given time to your expense. I mean, so like if you have a large company or a large organization like the U.S. government, the U.S. government needs to have essentially a similar cloud infrastructure where they have data centers all around the world, or at least all around the country. And all around the world, basically everywhere we got a military base, we're probably going to end up having some type of data center associated with it.
Yeah. And just to give a little bit of insight on why it's from a money perspective, how it works is that I work for, we use the cloud as well where I work at, and won't give out too much of my personal information. In my company, so the platform that we're using, we use Oracle, and just moving to the cloud using cloud services, it saved the company, I think, between $5 or $6 million a year. Just moving to, so the reason why it's so good using the cloud now for a lot of people is that it migrates away from the older system of how things are managed as far as data management, resources, and you're minimizing in some instances the resources it takes to basically accomplish the same thing and house the same type of application, the same type of data that you're trying to that you need to use.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, the purpose of the cloud, in general terms, is just to leverage the resources of a larger platform than you can use without having to actually have that larger platform at hand. You can, however much money you have, you can rent the resources for however long you need them. If you're trying to build a website and you're trying to build like the next Instagram, in fact, like with Snapchat or something like that, Snapchat put $2 billion into Google Cloud's platform. If you're trying to build a platform out, instead of having to build your own data center, instead of having to build your own platform, your own networks, getting all of those resources, you can rent those resources quickly and get them implemented quickly. The way software works now, it used to be a point in time where you had to, if you wanted a server, if you wanted a machine, you had to put that machine to work. You had to get that machine, build that machine out. You had to run the software on top. You had to get it running on the networks. And you had to actually put your software on top of that. The way that this software all works now, all of those interconnected servers that they just build out, they just set up hundreds and hundreds and thousands of servers, and they're just sitting there ready, waiting for somebody to use. And at the click of a button, you can essentially build out a server in like 3 seconds. You can type a couple commands. You have the server that you need, software that you need, run what you need, and get it out and running in whatever location you want as well. Like I said, these platforms like Google has 7,500 machines. I mean, I have 7,500 data centers. Any location in the world that I need it as closest to me or closest to whoever my client base is, I can get a server there. And it's just as instant, just as fast. And I can get it running. I can get it popping, get it moving. There's a whole change of industry and everything sort of moving toward that. And these companies are making larger profits because of that, because it used to be smaller companies would run these data centers and they didn't have the same agenda that they have now with the cloud. And now those companies are getting bought out by Amazon and Google and Microsoft, and they're becoming part of the Google Cloud or Amazon service. Yeah. And they're taking all those resources, all that data center, that whole area, they're buying it out, turning it in part of their platform. And like I said, with that software, it just makes it so easy that you can just, instead of all the time it takes to get a machine, it's literally like 3 seconds to build a machine up and get it running. And even on top of that is all the services that can be built on top that make it easier for us to do simple shit like share files, like calendar. Every application that Google has is basically built on Amazon Web Services. I mean, on Google Cloud. Yeah. I don't want to mess it up. I said that.
But
like,
that should happen. What you think would happen if Google and Amazon merged?
The government would step in. I mean, government ain't letting that one go through.
That's too much, bro. They become the government.
Yeah, too much. They just buy the government. Like, yo, we America now. I mean, we just gonna make it a part of
Google America.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I mean, like, all of the software that we use, even Snapchat built their platform on a cloud platform. Facebook has a cloud platform. They don't necessarily sell it to the rest of the world, so they don't call it like Facebook Cloud or something like that. But their whole platform, everything that they build up, is built on that same infrastructure because it's what they call a fault tolerant system, where if you build it while the way that you build it, nothing will ever go down anywhere because you have things in redundancy everywhere. So everything's always backed up somewhere. Somewhere something's picking up where something else may have fell off. Yeah. So like, you gotta data center in Ohio, that joint fails, another one can pick up. If you have one in Chicago that's failing, another one can pick up, and it's all automated, all automatic. I mean, and having all that automation work for you on that level, you basically have this internet world that we have today where everything is 24/7, running 24/7, and it's all in simpatico. It's like it's everything is synchronized and everything is organized in a way where there is no concept of downtime unless you just did something wrong.
Unless it's like a serious migration upgrade happened. Like, and you notice that because like back in the day with how a lot of application was, like it was, there were several times where, you know, I remember like a MySpace had to go down or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I had to go down for a little bit to like make some changes. Like now,
the Twitter whale fail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
you don't even see that no more because they perfected it at this point.
Right. So it's like the cloud is real strong. So I'm thinking like again. I guess the question now I have, and I think I said, from my stance, I think it's because Microsoft has pretty much been in the game longer of government contracting. Mm-hmm. I think too. I want to add to that. I think that whenever you're dealing with the news is going to get out there. You feel what I'm saying? So whenever you're dealing with like a company that is primarily like customer centric, focused on consumer, like maximizing how much profits can be gained from consumerism.
Yeah.
Merge that with the government. I think that may pose as like a soft conflict of interest. You know what
I mean? Yeah. That was kind of the conflict that I was thinking. I couldn't really get it out there. The fact that Amazon's number one business, besides Amazon Web Services, besides the cloud, the fact that their number one business is selling shit, like they're basically in the product business, the retail business, and they're in the advertisement business. And if you're in the advertisement business, that means that you're collecting information and you're collecting all these users' data. And like, if you're collecting all these people's data and you're working with the government, it's no way that you're not part of any conspiracy. Like everything that's conspiracy is related to you and the government now.
There you go.
Like and like you can't hide it. And Amazon really, like Microsoft doesn't, like they used to, but they really kind of fell out of being in the advertisement realm. And we'll talk about that with that other article about the search. They really kind of are not in advertisement as much as they used to be at the earlier stages. Like a while ago, remember when they had MSN and it was just like everybody got MSN accounts with that damn butterfly. It was like my butterfly. Like that was when they were trying to be a media corporation dealing with like competing against like Facebook, I mean not Facebook, but Yahoo in the early days. They were like presenting media to you, and they were big on advertisement back then.
And like,
yeah, and they were part of it with MSNBC, and NBC's media corporation, and like, I mean, and even now with MSNBC, like which is Microsoft and National Broadcast Channel. Yeah, I mean, like,
and I promise you, some people don't even know that.
Yeah, yeah.
MSNBC and just think it's just like a thing. It's like, nah, like Microsoft is involved.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're putting money into the advertisement game for media. For like, that's how they have to understand how that works, and more than likely, they have backings for like hardware and stuff like that. They probably furnish the whole office with like Microsoft hardware. Everybody get a Surface and stuff like that. But like. And also they deal in advertisement, but that sort of backed out. They kind of backed out of that industry. That was the Steve Ballmer age. Right after Steve Jobs left, Steve Ballmer sort of got into the business. Steve Ballmer was like his right-hand man for business. And he took over for a while, but then really it started becoming this new guy who it is now. Satya Nadella, who sort of deals more in just good software development and building out good applications and stuff like that. So, and he's big on this whole Microsoft Azure cloud platform as well. So he's kind of he's kind of leaning away from and gaming is like the other thing that they really big into, enterprise software platforms and gaming. So like they sort of backed out of really getting into the market of media and advertisement. So like being in that realm, they just really focused on software and coming up with the best software, coming up with the best platform to build software on. And in that realm, that's basically what the government is really looking for. Like they're looking to get a secure platform that's not going to have a company have its own internal compromises. Where it's like an internal conflict of interest because of the business that they're in.
And the thing is, like you pointed out when you said they're like basically cutting out a lot of their efforts out to focus on it. Like whenever you spread yourself thin, man, you know, it's never you're never as impactful as you need to be, as you look to be when you're the jack of all trades rather than the king of none. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
And, I mean, or versus the king of none. And I think that by what they're doing from a business standpoint, why that it's going to work for them is because once they become the juggernaut of that niche, like the thing that they're focusing on, like although like that will be their thing, or they may even be branded as dealing with this, they'll then have the bandwidth to focus on getting into other things. But they focus on becoming, like I said, the having the what they call the staying power, basically dominating that sector, so that they are the first thing that comes to mind when it comes to working on that stuff.
Plus they have the productivity. That's the other thing. Like they have that productivity software, and like we were talking about with the cloud, like the software that's built on top of software, the old Microsoft Word and Office, that whole productivity suite is becoming Office 365 now, and everything's going into the structure where everything's stored in a cloud. So all of the government's documentation, all of their emails, all of their backup systems are going into this clone of what is already Microsoft Azure. Is going to be like government Azure, and it's going to be their version. Microsoft has Office 365, and this one's going to be government 365, and like it's everything's just moving over there to that realm. Everything's getting stored over there, and they're already familiar with it.
And I think all of what we're saying, I think that's pretty much the reason as to why they kind of the Pentagon contract, like they pretty much, it sounds like they said it was, at least, you know, they made it seem like it was a better thing, but I really feel like they just edged the companies out. You know, Google already had a conflict of interest dealing with a lot of the international affairs, so they was out, and then with Amazon being more like consumer centric focus, it's kind of was like, you know, Microsoft, we've been riding with y'all for a minute. You know, y'all, you know, got some shit going on with you anyway, with a lot of the scandals and government shit. Like, let's just stay in bed with each other. That's what I feel like.
Right.
That's what happened with the Zero Press.
Yeah, it was definitely the last deciding factor. It was definitely like a major, like, dinner that they had. And it was just two people like, yo, so what you going to do? They had all the meetings. They had all the official meetings and all of that. And then they had one last dinner. It was like, yo. So what's going to be? And then they had the next morning meeting, was like, yeah, let's do this. And it was based off of pure politics of like, you know, we just have this. It was no longer like over the table, like office meetings with paperwork. It had to be that last moment of like 11 o'clock at a bar. Like we're just going to go with you guys. We're gonna go with you guys.
3 p.m. at the strip club. People don't know.
Yeah, and you better not screw us. Yeah, man.
There you go. Agreed. So what we got next, man?
Matter of fact, I just wanted to look at it. They got rid of MSNBC. MSNBC. Microsoft has stopped doing their MSNBC as of like July 2012. Wow. So they was all part of the same organization. Microsoft and NBC was part of that organization till like 2012, and then they backed out, tried to do some different things. So they're not really in that realm anymore. But that kind of goes in conflict with this next article, which is good segue about the fact that this whole gaming thing with Mixer. So
the gaming industry, yeah.
Yeah, let's just go over this real quick. I don't want to spend too much time on this guy. I don't even know who this person is.
Gaming Star Shroud. Let me look this guy up real quick. Gaming
Star Shroud.
So the thing is, a little bit backdrop. I actually, at a certain stage of my life, I was trying to be a professional gamer.
Yeah, nice.
I played Dead or Alive. That was my thing. It was a fighting game.
Dead Alive was the truth. Yeah.
Dead Alive, it kind of fell off in my opinion now, but Dead Alive back then was definitely the thing. And like, it had a lot of stuff. Of course, it was a couple of titles came out solely for Microsoft. It was solely on the Xbox. So, it was pretty prevalent there. But then, too, like with, I was playing Gears of War stuff. But backdrop, the thing is, people don't know that the gaming industry has been this, like, it's been in this cocoon state. You know, like it's because it's heavily for a long period of time was associated with just like, you know, solely being entertainment. You know, some people would even say like wasting time away. You know, I had a girlfriend before I say that it was nothing but just figures and blocks moving on the screen. I had to leave her. But like this thing of like everything was going on with gaming, people didn't really know like the potential of it. So now that we're in this, we're in the social media age and, you know, there's a lot more money that's being exchanged with different tournaments privately and publicly that's being held. You have bigger companies that's jumping into this that are seeing the money pop, the money opportunities. And with that birth of people being, you know, bigger companies investing into the gaming industry now, like that are not directly connected to gaming, it gives the incentive for more casual gamers to become more professional and make this into a full-time income for themselves. So,
yeah.
This guy Shroud, I'm actually looking him up right now. His Gaming Star Shroud. I don't know what game he plays.
Yeah, so he Shroud leaves Twitch and he goes to Microsoft Mixer. So like Microsoft is getting into I guess streaming again. They've basically gotten into streaming again with this platform called Mixer. So there, I guess you can say that they are in the media entertainment again, as they, like I say, with that last article they got out of MSNBC in like 2012, but this is like their resurgence into another streaming, into a streaming platform that they are calling Mixer. And this article of this guy Shroud leaving Twitch and going into Mixer, I mean, that's a hit for Amazon and then a win for Microsoft, because Amazon owns Twitch and Mixer, Microsoft owns Mixer. Yeah. And apparently the streamer Shroud, I never really heard of him, but apparently he's a 25-year-old guy, streams Counter-Strike and Apex Legends and stuff like that. And he's moving into that. He's streaming over there. And the other guy, I remember hearing about him. I've seen him a couple times on YouTube. Ninja is, yeah. He left Twitch a while ago and he moved over to Mixer as well. And there was a big thing about that. And I mean, the idea that they're paying these guys to move over in the first place. So it's exclusively that they'll be streaming on these platforms. So they're no longer streaming on Twitch at all. And they're only streaming on Mixer, and that's to be able to, they're essentially sponsoring these guys and pulling their fan base over so that they can get them to stream on there, and that so that they can push advertisements on them because they have video content, and in between the episodes, like at the beginning of the video, at the end of their video, and wherever in the middle, they'll be placing advertisements on them.
Yeah. Like the methodology like behind this, like what people are doing, this is, and I guess jumping a little bit more into my marketing bag, mm-hmm. that this is a classic case of a bigger company taking it the advantage, taking the opportunity of online direct marketing. And one of the axioms that when you're going into direct marketing online is that you have to find what they call congregations of people. Right, mm-hmm. to be able to put your ads, put your products in front of them. And there's nothing that is more effective than going to a place where you know that certain people thrive and certain people congregate where they hang out at, and being able to tailor make the advertisements, the products that you want to sell them, and being able to use one of the most dominant, one of the most prevalent people within that congregation to push your message. Right. I think that's what is happening. Why? Because you would think, you know, Twitch has kind of been You know, Twitch is what Xerox is to copying, right? You know what I mean? Like, there was a point in time where people don't even say, I want to make a copy of a page. They say, I want to Xerox a page. And the reason why is because Xerox had, they established something called, I guess, you call it dominance within that, you know, as far as copying and stuff like that. But Twitch, long story short, has pretty much been like the dominant player when it comes to gaming streaming. Just the move of, I think it says here in the article that he had about, that Shroud had about 7 million fans on Twitch. That's bigger than the populace of Atlanta. When 7 million people, you know, on this one guy, man, playing, and different ages, of course, but, you know, people watching him play all these video games. And, you know, it's a classic case of the businessman that is in these corporations going in and saying, you know, looking at statistics, looking at what's going on in the industry and saying, hey, here's a guy that has a lot of pull, a lot of influence. Let's pay him some money to represent us so we can tap into that person's fan base, that person's congregation. You know, we may throw him a little bit. That whatever money they threw him, I'm pretty sure it's pennies compared to what Microsoft has. You know what I mean?
Like, Oh, yeah. Pennies, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but they probably paid a dollar. They probably paid a dollar per person. Yeah, right. Man, they probably gave them 7 million straight out because you got 7 million followers, like 7 million people.
For the common person, that's a lot of it's a lot of bread in the bucket. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
exactly.
7 million, shoot. I wish I would. You know, about to get me.
Yeah, back, because they do tournaments and hope that they can get $1 million tournament win.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and to be able to get 7 million off the bat just to be able to gain whether you win the tournament or not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's because your reputation and your following, that basically was enough.
Yeah.
I mean, both of these, for real, both of these companies, Twitch and Mixer, are essentially trying to feed off of the mess ups over at YouTube, for real. Like, YouTube had a lot of issues with just their community in general, because essentially Google has turned YouTube into like a social network and a farm. Like, even though it is like primarily a video platform, it's also secondarily a social network.
Yeah.
And they've had a lot of issues with like how people communicate on there, and the comment sections have been trash for a while. And like, for gamers in particular, there was no like unique gaming features that people liked as game streamers. Like broadcasting software, you have to have like overlays. You like to have overlays and all of these features. Like, there wasn't any of that stuff that was capable for YouTube streamers without having to use some type of third party software. If you wanted to be able to monetize your videos beyond just advertisements, if you want to get like donations and stuff like that, somebody just give you a couple of dollars just off the bat of your streaming, you couldn't do that
on YouTube
at all. Yeah, I mean, so like Twitch came in with these different ideas, and they were backed by Amazon. Well, I think Amazon eventually bought them, that's when it really pushed. But like, initially they had these ideas anyway, and like, for gaming purposes, like, how can we make this a thing? Because it's becoming a thing already. How can we improve the quality of the experience? And how, like,
maximize the experience and maximize the profits that can be
made. Yeah, exactly. That's basically what it is. How can we make the experience better so that we can monetize it better? And they basically were able to become players because of that. They switched over now. Like, Twitch now does other topics and other categories of video, but right. I mean, they started off with being in gaming. They were able to capture a younger audience. They were able to capture a younger content creation audience, like community, so that they can build out software for it, so that they can build out content for it in the first place.
And I think that as a sidebar, I keep that thought, bro. I want to throw this in there. I think that that's actually a brilliant move from companies to be able to tap into something where the content creators, the people who are socially invested into that platform, are young, because they grow with the progression, with the growth of that company. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. I'm gonna iterate off of that. Like, they had YouTube Kids, which was just supposed to be a second app that was geared toward children, so that children can have a safe experience while they're online and be able to use YouTube for that, so that when they would grow up, they would still see YouTube as that platform, and they would have that child development process where they started off young using it and they grew up to use it. Similar to Facebook Messenger. They have Facebook Messenger for kids, and they want to get people in there so that they at least create an account for that kid and let that kid use Messenger. And a couple years later, they grow up as an adult, and it feels like a prize to that child, for real. Like, they feel like, oh, now I can go to the next level of Facebook. I can go to the next level of YouTube, and I've grown up a little bit more. I mean, so that's like it's like they made it, it's gamification, like we were talking about earlier. Yeah. Like, they made it appeasing to people to want to be able to use these platforms. Yeah, I mean, and particularly when you start them young, you got them in there for life.
Yeah, pretty much. It's a part of their programming, their social programming. Like, and that's pretty much how we are with our phones now. There was a time where people didn't, you know, look at their phone all the time for the time or the contents they memorized it, or was able, mm-hmm. You know. But now that we've been so, it's a part of our lifestyle so much. It's like, you know, what would we do without it? And it's the same thing, I think, with a lot of these platforms. Like, they want to be able to get it early and establish that habit, so it's like people can't live without it. And once it becomes a way of lifestyle, I mean, that it makes it easier for these companies to go in and pretty much be able to pitch and sell whatever services they want, because they're not having to deal with, I guess, what we call cold traffic. It's like they're kind of warm to the experience, you know what I mean? Even hot, where it's like, okay, they know that associated with this, and they can look forward to being advertised on certain things, or, you know, what comes with, you know, the advertising of that company. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that this is, it's a power play.
Yeah. It's definitely a power play.
Yeah.
It's definitely, if they can at least build it, they know they're going to come, and it's going to at least allow them the ability to move people over to the platform. It gives them some power just to have it around. They can at least have some say on how the video streaming industry works, and it's going to go about to have Mixer as a competitor to Twitch and to YouTube and to Facebook Live. Cause I mean, Facebook Watch is becoming dominant too, because as a video streaming platform. And it was a while when Microsoft was kind of partnering with Facebook in advertisement, but that passed years ago. So like, they need their own platform. That's why they bought LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So but that's another note, man.
Yeah, that's another. Yeah, it's crazy how, you know, what happens is, especially with these companies, man, like, companies just adapt, like, the idea of gamification, even when it comes to just doing business, right? And I think what you're seeing is that trickles down into, like, when you're dealing with the consumers or the content creators for different platforms that these bigger companies invest in, it almost becomes like a sport. Like, you know, what I see what's happening here is, like, this is nothing more than, you know, it's probably mid-season or like week 5 or week 6, and, you know, somebody trading, you know, it's football, somebody putting out a first-round draft pick and a couple other players, or you say some money to get, mm-hmm. you know, a player on another team. You feel me? Saying? Like, it's nothing more than like the game of Madden. You know what I mean? Like, right. That's what it's come to. It's like, okay, well, Microsoft seen this guy, Stroud over here, he got a strong following. Basically, he had, because that's what pretty much athletes are, right? You know what I mean? They're a source of entertainment.
And these guys are like free agents.
Yeah, they free, you know, free agents. They like, you know, well, I'm gonna go ahead and pay you this X, Y, and Z, and you can come over here, wear this jersey, and mm-hmm. by them wearing that jersey, they get access to the fans, the people to follow that person that wears that jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brilliant concept. I just see that what's gonna happen is just like what happened in sports, man. It's gonna it's fun and games, and then there's money being made, and then I think eventually. I hope not, but, you know, not too soon. But then regulations and politics has to get involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Too much monopolizing and racketeering going on. It's like, all right, well, you gotta start regulating.
Yeah, we gonna see that soon. We gonna see people, the regulation happen on gaming happen pretty soon. That's gonna be a whole thing, because the way that gaming is coming now, in the details of it in general, like the way that it looks. At some point, when we're streaming, at some point, people are going to start gambling on these games, just watching them like like football and baseball and basketball, and they're going to start gambling on them, and they're going to have to lock that shit down somehow.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Let's go to this next article, which is not news to many people. Microsoft is giving up on regular people using Bing. Like, I don't know anybody that Bings anything unless they do it by accident and don't realize it till it's too late. Like, they search it and then they look at the search results and be like, this shit don't look right. And they be like, oh, because I Binged it. My bad.
This is what happens. You pull up something, or you come into the library, you sit down, you gotta use the internet, and you have like a default browser.
Yep.
You go to it and you start typing, you type G-O-O.
Yeah.
You type G-O-O, and then this thing pops up, and you're like, hold on, like, it's supposed to, I thought Google was supposed to pop up, or something. It's like, it's trying to find a definition of like what Google.com is, and it's like,
yeah,
that's what Bing is, you know?
Yeah.
This essentially has become that, a thing of like people discover they're using it and then go to Google.
I heard a while back it was like the number one search in Bing is Google.
Yes.
Like that's the number one search. Everybody just looking for where Google at so they can get to it. I mean, and that's the end all be all. But like this article in particular is trying to say that it's like a backwards way of saying that same thing as the topic heading. They're trying to say to like Bing for business. I mean, they're trying to push the idea of Bing search for business use so that employees and staff can find documents and articles in their intranet and stuff like that better. But at the same time, they're kind of not putting any advertisement into Bing general anymore. Yeah, I mean, like they're not putting any more money into advertisements. You don't see any more advertisements in them trying to be like, use Bing, and with a ding in the back, you're like Bing, ding. Like they don't do those advertisements no more. They basically stopped all that.
Yeah,
I mean, like they used to do. They used to have ads, but they stopped because ain't nobody coming. everybody that's coming is leaving again.
I thought I was trying to go to Google
because they don't have good search results. You know, I mean, and for the most part,
terrible search results.
Like the only time, and that was the thing. What was it? And this is how money flows. The most recent thing that happened was for Apple to use an Apple iPhone for search, they place bids on who's going to be the search default on Apple iPhones. Oh. I mean, so they have billion-dollar bids, and I swear I want to say 3 billion, but it might be a different number. But Google basically threw their bid up for, I want to say 3 billion, might be different. I want to say 3 billion to have Google be the default search engine for Apple for iPhones. I mean, it was Yahoo, and Yahoo for the past, I want to say since about 2012, Yahoo has really just been Bing search. If you ever go to Yahoo and be like, look at the Yahoo bar, it's a Yahoo bar, but at the little corner in gray, it's a powered by Bing. So like it's been Microsoft Bing for real for the longest time. And since that switch over, that means that they're not getting any more search results anymore because they're not going through Yahoo anymore. They're not going from using Apple iPhones to using a Yahoo search, which is really a Bing result. Yeah, I mean, so since they're not getting that hit anymore, they're not getting any normal people anymore. They're getting old heads that don't know any better, and then everybody else that's searching to use Google.
There's a point in time where it was a good run. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a part of, it's a part of growth, try, fail, adjust. But this thing, what they're talking about, trying to make it for like just intranet search within, like, yo, just wrap it up, man. What's the wrap it up box, man? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's a two-parter. I think it's a two-parter. Like, they got to, like, the part of that might be with their whole mixer thing. Like, they trying to build, because they got to build the data out. So
I didn't know that, yeah.
Like they gotta have, they put content into Mixer, and it allows them to have search results from Mixer. They put content into their own LinkedIn, so they put content into LinkedIn, and it allows them to get search results through Bing. I mean, they put all these search results in there, and it allows it to be useful for if you need to use those services. Yeah, I mean, like if you need to use Bing, if you need to use Facebook, I mean, not Facebook, but LinkedIn, you'll still be able to use it and get access to that information, and they still own that much of it. Yeah, I mean, but like for the most part, it's a system that's just going to be there, but they not making the money the way that they wanted to make money off of, because like the way Google makes money off of it, they basically every search that result that you do is potential advertisement grab for them. And Google has the mind share for real. And that's the thing, is Google has the mind share. So like advertisement really isn't happening unless we put it on. Like when it comes to software developers, web developers, app developers, we all got to choose what advertisement platform we're going to be going with,
yeah,
to have on our app or to have on our website. And it's not like they just forcing ads on us, but we all chose to use Google Ads. Yeah, I mean, Amazon has their advertisement platform that is starting to pick up some, but that's based off of people choosing to use Amazon's platform to promote advertisements. So like, it's
one of those things, bro, where I think that there is, so you can find a way to recycle apps and rebrand it so it can become something bigger. Like, I think that's what's happened with the whole like Musical.ly shifting to TikTok. Now you can go through these phases like where you rebrand, change the name, mm-hmm. and then, you know, do some the right type of marketing around it, and then it can become something that looks completely different, but it may include a lot of the same. Which is something I think, as a segue, Facebook is failing at that, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, but I think that, you know, what you brought up was a valid point, saying that, you know, they can just kind of shelf it as being a competitor in a space with like Google, where the branding and the staying power is so strong, that see if they can rebrand it and use it in a way that as to support another project, so it can start to gain more traction, start to get more traffic.
Yeah.
I would also say too, man, with that, but I think like you said it a little bit before, like when you first started going, man, it's like my personal opinion, I think Bing searches was trash, man. I don't know.
Yeah. you look at it and be like, yo, what are these results? Like I didn't ask for any of this. I mean, give me Google, man. Give me Google.
Yeah. Let me Google this, man. You don't be like, no one goes and be like, yo, I'm about to Bing this real quick. No one says that. No one be like, yo, let me go Yahoo this. Let me go ask for Jeeves. That like no one does that, man.
It's let me ask Jeeves. Jeeves. You got G? I'm a DuckDuckGo. Like, yo, if it's not like just there by default, in most cases, you're not going to do it unless you have the best result. And Google, like Google had a period of time when they wasn't getting the right results, but they fixed it. They fixed the hell out of it. And they got the results to the point that it almost read your mind.
They got it where as though they fixed it. And that's so important, like what you were saying, like why, you know, the programmers and like it's so much more that goes into making a successful app. Like I think that Bing, like the people that develop Bing may have missed, because you look at like, let's compare Bing to Google. You know what I mean? Like Google has a thing where it's like every day or every week, even so, like they got some type of new flavor up there where you click the Google sign and then it's like the Google logo and it like brings up something from Wikipedia or tells some information about something, or maybe a game or something. I don't remember coming across anything like that with Bing.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Same thing too, like with the Google, like when you start to type certain searches, it'll start to pop up and populate things based on what you're typing in. So you can kind of see, like you only have to type in the whole question or the whole thing you're searching. You know, it can kind of read your history of the things and shit, which is also goes to the programming of it. Like
it doesn't even just read your history. It reads everybody's history based on the popular decision on what would be searched. So like if you searching for like the weather Tuesday in Like, it knows based on the fact of where you are, but it also knows based on the fact that everybody else also asked it based on that location. And it's like, it's using some 200 factors. Yeah, I mean, like, it uses some 200 factors along with artificial intelligence. So all of those factors, and then on top of it, they're using artificial intelligence to make the best decision. I mean, so like, and it does it like that, like, no matter what you're talking about, it's at that point, if you aren't even trying to compete on that level, you might as well just go ahead and push this product to something else. And to your point of branding, like, Microsoft is, I feel like Microsoft is the leader of rebranding. Microsoft is the captain of rebranding. Like, Microsoft has been Microsoft all the whole time as a corporate company, but their mail system went from like MSN to Yahoo.com to, I mean, not the Yahoo, what was it? MSN.com, Hotmail.com, Live.com, Outlook.com. And I mean, they done branded their mailing system four different times. Right. I mean, and it's like they've changed it for every decade for real. I mean, since like the 90s, 2000s, 2010s, going into 2020s. Yeah. I mean, like and they still hit, and they still a dominant factor. I can't say they number one, can't say they number 20. They like number three to number four all the time.
They in the top five for sure.
All the time. Yeah,
top five, so, they don't lie, man.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that comes from like the way Bill Gates thought about it in comparison to like a Steve Jobs or anybody. Like, Bill Gates was methodical. He was sharp and methodical, and he was kind of cutthroat, and like, it was very much a numbers play more than anything. Like, the branding and all that stuff, he left it to somebody else, but it's the structure of business and the business that he was in, like, he was the pinnacle of like being a nerd type shit. He was the pinnacle of making sure that that shit was an A+ perfected process.
He definitely got a 5.0 out of a 4.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he made sure that shit was concise. I mean, so like, that's a company that's not probably going to go anywhere for a while. I mean, cloud stuff, gaming stuff, whether they do good in search or not, it's whatever, whether they do good in search or not. Like, they're going to stay at the top, like Oracle and shit like that. Like, they're not going, IBM, they're not going anywhere for a minute.
Oracle Systems is, you know, especially within the financial sector, like, they have that's the financial sector when it comes to like enterprise applications, pretty much is Oracle.
I mean, they run database. They run database platforms. I mean, like, anything, any system that you need a database for, it's going to be an Oracle database. But this is an open source system, like MySQL was even bought by Amazon, by Oracle. Like, everything is Oracle when it comes to storing data for the most part. Like, new systems that are coming out there, that's cool, MongoDBs and all that, that's cool, but Oracle got it. Oracle got it.
It's become like a household name when it comes to databases. I was seeing it, like, too, you brought up, I think, an interesting point, man. I think it may go into like how Bing will maybe metamorph over time. Mm-hmm. But like, so what I'm finding was cool about what you identified, man, and if you notice the history of how Microsoft became Microsoft, is that for all intents and purposes, it's a borrowed concept, right? It's a borrowed concept. So it's kind of like, you know, and with it being a borrowed concept, there's a book out there called Still Like an Artist, where you should emulate that which is already been built and put your own flavor on it, right?
Microsoft in a whole is a borrowed concept. Yeah. Almost everything that Microsoft has been able to do is a borrowed concept.
And that's crazy. And it's like, we're bringing up this, like, you made an excellent point how, like, over the years, man, Microsoft has been excellent at rebranding things that either they have acquired or things that they have already that needs to be relaunched. And it's like, I think that's just real cool, like, because that's the, I think the it matches the CEO, the founder's ideology of, I guess, how to do business, because that's pretty much what Bill Gates did. I mean, he works his ass off, you feel what I'm saying? But when it comes to like the business stuff, although he's very nerdy, he was very smart in knowing how to repackage something and sell it as something different.
Yeah, he got a documentary on Netflix. It's like a 3-episode documentary about just how the things that he's doing since he's been out of working with Microsoft, and still how the way he thinks. And like, I mean, he got some things with him that you just got to be a certain type of person, and being able to implement that mindset into your industry. You know what I mean? Like, Apple has been sort of, they originally had the mindset of being like the artistic human platform, which was Apple, and Microsoft sort of had gotten to be known. They were supposed to be known as sort of like the Office platform, but they definitely have like jumped the realm, because it was beyond just being whether you're an Office platform or a human platform. It was always the human platform. It was just a matter of how to actually implement it to the most diverse of people among us, rather than like, because like Apple used to always have that 1984s platform, and they try to act like we're the different platform. We're for the alternative thinkers, and we're for the different mindset. But now you're in 2019, and it seems like they're like this monolith platform, where it's either this one platform or nothing. Versus something like Android and something like Microsoft, the way that they built their platforms out, it was like, this is for everybody, no matter who you are. I mean, and everybody has a task that they can possibly get done that with this system, or the system can assist and help make it better for them. Because people are people and we're so diverse, it takes a larger understanding of how diversity works and how dynamics works. And that's a mathematic calculation that's beyond most people, for real.
It's beyond the layman.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta think beyond that. You gotta do stuff that's non-traditional.
For sure, I think that's something that it's crazy. I mean, I would love to just sit down with some of these guys who founded these companies, man, and if whether it be paying them or doing something to get to like the nitty gritty of like, what was it like coming up? Cause I know that with Bill Gates and him founding it, I think they said like, he never took a day off, man. Like
maybe
Sunday or something like that, but though, like it was never like any holidays and going away.
Look at that documentary, man. That joint did a good job at going over like who he is beyond his like, his character, his large character, like what made him who he is. Like it was something that he's been doing for like 20 years almost, where he just takes a week off and he goes off into this like reserve, and it's just like a small house by a lake, and he don't bring no electronics, no nothing besides books. Yeah, I mean, and he studies. Wow. And he just sits out there and studies concepts and topics that he has interest of. And he studies them for like that week. And then when he comes back off of being out there, he comes back with a new state of mind of things that he wants to do. And then he connects with those people. Like he'll spend time talking about agriculture and how, like he'll study agriculture and like how, one of his products was, one of the things that he was financed was like creating clean water and like how that's all made. He'll spend a week just not connected to the internet, just understanding mechanics and the process of water filtration and stuff like that. And then he'll come back.
You're talking about a guy that I think they said he is the official owner of Leonardo da Vinci's journal.
Yeah, that type. Yeah, I mean, like.
And you think about like how much of a, so it's not like a copy, right? And it's not like, even if it was a copy, it'd be floating out there. Like the life, the internal thoughts, the struggles, the trials, tribulations, the triumphs of Leonardo da Vinci that was recorded in his journal before he died. Bill Gates owns that.
Right.
A copy.
Right.
I mean, like that just says so much about not only just the access he has, but where his mind is, and then the type of power that a man really like that really has. You see what I'm saying? And I'm looking at
the way he uses that power, man. Because yeah. I mean, I mean, he could be way more malicious with it.
Oh, wow.
If he wanted to be. Yeah, I mean, like how we consider Jeff Bezos, like all of the great things that people say that Jeff Bezos is doing, but then how it contradicts a lot of the other things that he's doing with Amazon. Like, you know, he's supposedly giving people $15 an hour for working in them warehouses, but then he's also cutting full-time employment so they don't get their benefits and things like that. It's just kinda, I mean, like, he knew when to get out. Bill Gates knew when to get out the game and start something else. He took his billions and he was like, yo, let me just work on something else that needs real help. I mean, I don't need to just be more richer. I need to start helping people.
I think that's what's up, man. I would just hope that, you know, that same spirit of being able to adjust and seeing how to use what you have already to benefit the people, they use that for Bing, because, like, this is something where they're trying to compete. You know, as a marketing principle, they say that there's no direct marketing, especially online, is that there's no strategic advantage of being the second best leader, right? You're either going to be the best or the cheapest. And
yeah.
The fact that you know, Bing is kind of like trying to be in the middle of this. It's like it's a battle lost, man. Like, you know, either they're going to be the cheap, like, you know, something that is so rinky dink but slightly effective that people use it, or they're going to be Google. And they can't be Google. So it's like they have to repurpose that for something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's the private market. That's all it really is. They, like, Google will be the public sector's platform, de facto platform, but, like, there's just certain things that it can't have access to. And that's where they'll need another search system. And when it comes to Microsoft's proprietary products, they'll be the search system for that. When it comes to, like, their Office 365 stuff, they'll be the proprietary system for that. But, like, outside of that, open world search, they just lost the race. It's not even that they can't do it. They just lost the race. I mean, the race is over. I mean, it's been over. They trying to have them run with another platform, anything like that, they just look stupid. There ain't nobody out there. Yeah, I mean, ain't nobody looking at them no more.
Right now, so, they finishing because it doesn't look good to quit. That's what it is. Like, you know what I mean?
They still have Windows. Yeah, you know I mean, so that's a platform that they can have it within. But when it comes to going throughout, like within search of your devices and all your files and documents on there, it'll be great within that. But once it starts saying, let me go and find out some public information, it's not going to be a one. Don't nobody want to talk to Cortana. Don't nobody want to talk to her. Like, we all wanted to talk to her when Halo was out, but don't nobody want to talk to her. We all just like that purple Halo dress, man. She was in that. She was tight in that Halo hologram outfit. That's all that was. You know, I didn't even talk to her. I just won't talk to her. That wasn't it. Ain't nobody talking. Now she don't even talk right.
You know what I'm thinking? Man, maybe they can brand themselves a bit, give them a little more access to the dark web and the deep web.
I mean,
a little bit. It starts to get a little dangerous when you jump into stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, I mean, ideally that's part of it, because, like, even whether they have a brandable platform for search, they can, I mean, at any point, they could just open source the software and just be like, here, we just going to give everybody the code and say, if you want to make your own search system, you can use Bing as the de facto of how to create a search engine for whatever system you're trying to manage. I mean, they can give that out open source, and then anybody can take it up, build their own cloud platform, and run a search system if they want. Do one that can search the dark web. They have search engines for it now. But they can basically just create one that's bingable. Nobody will probably I'm having a lot of hiccups. Nobody would probably want to use it, but it could be a market if they just gave it out to everybody as a software project, like put it on a GitHub or something. Be like, these are the instructions. This is how you got to do it. But here's how you do it. Yeah, I mean, that could be an alternative.
I think that as a segue, this ain't the name to talk about nothing, but I heard it's a lot of craziness that you can access like on the dark web. Right? I think they said that on our typical searches, right? And when you search whatever on Google, they say that for what's actually available to you, Google only shows you between 95% and even less than that, 98%. Well, they censor 95% to 98% of what you actually have access to in that search. Everything
else. Yeah.
Like that's the tip of the iceberg stuff that's maybe like regulating this or that, but there's a whole lot of other shit that you come across and you're like, wow, like, you know, I've heard all types of stuff when it comes to like.
Well, because they're curating how they want you to see the search results anyway. So like, I mean, half of it is just presentation. Like they collect all this information. Like I said, if there's like 200 points of determination of what is a search result before they say what's the number one search result, I mean, that's 200 points of assumption. You can have all these different search results, but those don't necessarily matter unless that's what you're particularly looking for. If you want to find dark web shit, they'll point you to dark web shit. The issue is that the dark web doesn't want to be found. So they block themselves from traditional commercial search engines. And like search engines had to go through this whole thing. There was an era that they had to go through where only that they, if they're going to be a commercial entity, they got to follow these commercial rules. And so like things like robots, like the robot text file and stuff like that, that's a file that you drop on every website to say what do you want to be indexed, what do you not want to be indexed. And public search engines like those, like Google and Bing and Yahoo, they have to follow that technically if they want to be a public entity online. And if you're another program and you just got your own search engine, you can create a search engine that can find certain things that you don't want other people to see, and you don't have to follow the robot's text file. You don't have to follow it. You can go around it, and you can find things that you don't want that other people don't necessarily want to be found. And they have dark web search engines, but part of the dark web search engines is that you got to be on the dark web to use them. You know what I mean? So like, there's ways to like get online to the dark web, to the quote unquote dark web. And you can use the public front facing web to find out what a search engine will be available, what search engines are out there for the dark web. You take that URL that only works on the dark web to the dark web. You use it on the dark web, and then you can search the network to find whatever you want in that dark web. But like, in order for the search engine to work for the dark web, you got to be on the web, I mean, so like, that's part of it. And then like the other thing is that they don't do, it's the dark web, so they're not doing search engine optimization. They don't want to be found. So it's like, you got to sort of know what you're looking for. And a lot of stuff that they do, like with picture, like there's no, in some cases you might not use text because text is easily searchable. You can have a piece of software scan a text. So they might put all their content in pictures so that like all the wording and everything might be in a picture format so that it can't be indexed necessarily. I mean, so like you can see it as a person, but you can't do any. You can't a bot can't read it. Right. I mean, so like it's they use a lot of human and like system hacks to get around being identified on the web. But then you search and navigate your way around. If you read enough, like they say, you want to hide anything, you want to hide valuable information, put it in a book type thing.
Yeah
I mean, you go to the bottom end of a questionable page in like some source code or something, you'll find the information you're looking for to get you to the thing that you want to get to. You just gotta know how to look, and that's the hard part. It's just you gotta know how to look and be determined enough for it, because the whole point of it is to be private networks. So the only people that's gonna know is you and me when I told you, and whoever else. Yeah. I mean, in the industry, if we told you go here, you can go there. Yeah, I mean, but if we ain't telling you to go there, we'll be like, "What you doing here?
Yeah, what you doing?"
Yeah. I mean, then we find your IP address, and then we do whatever we gotta do to get you.
Yeah, I mean. That's when we get into the movie's trying to portray, you know.
Yeah, because I mean, at that point, it's like, yeah, how real is the dark web? Like, you gotta be nice on that. Like, you gotta use all type. Like, I've searched the dark web, but I don't like doing it from anywhere local or identifiable.
Where your Uncle Samuel name can be traced.
I don't like doing it from there, and it's not even like I'm doing anything on there, but it's who manages the end servers. So like everybody got a server, just like on the regular web, because the regular web, the dark web and the regular web are just basically two networks that's on the same machine. So it's not like it's separate systems. It's just separate software that your computer uses to recognize the network exists. Yeah, I mean, so like if I'm just searching somewhere and I happen to run into somebody's server and I find out that they selling like little kids on or some shit like that, if I find that out, yeah, I mean, and they find my IP address, and that's my home IP address, you can damn be sure somebody gonna probably be at my door like, "Yo, was you on the website?" Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, like, I don't know nothing about your website.
Mailman coming by.
Yeah, man. Like, what you doing there? Like, I don't know nothing about it. So, like, I don't even touch it using like, using like public networks. Anything that I pay for, got my. Now you give me on a. I got like 10 laptops here. Yeah, man, you get me on one of these 10 laptops, and then I plug in like a USB install of like a version of Linux or something where I can mask a couple things first. Yeah, I mean, and then I go to like some random library's Wi-Fi. Then I'll check some things out, and I'll do that because I probably can get rid of this laptop, and the laptop ain't associated to me. Yeah, man. So like it's no pinpoint, and like you gotta think like that. Yeah, you can't allow yourself to get pinpoint. You can't be on there trying to download MP3s off the dark web, y'all. Like it's different from peer-to-peer. It's way different. Like if you on the dark web, then you probably doing something that you probably shouldn't, because there's a lot of things you can do on the public internet and be private enough. Yeah, I mean, so like if you over there doing something on there,
you need an extra level of
you automatically suspect. Even if you're not the actual person, you a suspect. Yeah, I mean, just off the jump. Yeah, I mean, just cause you looking. Yeah, I mean, so when I hop on, the few times that I have hopped on, I mean, I don't do it. I read about it and I learn the technology. But when it comes to actually getting on and connecting the networks, I gotta understand the tunnels that I allow myself to get into. You ever see like what's that joint? Inception, where he goes through layers and layers. He goes to layers of sleep.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same thing that you do that I do with my networks and my tunneling and stuff like that. I gotta go in a layer and another layer, so I act like I'm actually somewhere else, so that nobody knows what's going on for real. Barely myself, only from my memory do I know what's going on. And it got to be like that so that when I get out, I'm technically never was there in the first place. Yeah, I mean, that's how I got to be if you're doing that type of stuff.
Too many secrets, man. But
let's go over this last one, y'all. Let's close this joint out. The Microsoft Surface Duo and the partnership with Android. I just wanted to go over that real quick, because a couple weeks ago Microsoft came out with this dual screen device that they're gonna be coming out with next year, ideally. Microsoft got this issue about always coming out with these products, these very slick concept products, and never really coming out with it. But this one they made a part of their product line that they coming out with over the next year, and it really was something that people really liked, and it looked like it has a lot of backing behind it, a lot of potential behind it. People really looking forward to it. And essentially, it's a new way of a smartphone, tablet, dual screen device. I mean, it's they call it the Surface Duo. It's essentially a two screen device that folds in half, and it folds like a book.
I'm looking at it now, and I'm like, this actually may hit, man. Cause I'm looking at it, and I'm like, okay, we've gotten used to the Solo, like, you know, of course, you know how we use touchscreen phones now, but just this introduces something different as far as, I guess, be it that it is bigger in size, and, you know, you're able to use, I don't know, I guess they would try to make it whereas it would be the same amount or close to the same amount of space that a regular phone, you know, cell phone does now. But just be it that it has more, it probably gives them an opportunity to have like more processing speed, a better user experience, you know.
They have, you know, Samsung's been trying to come out with their foldable screen, their foldable tablet, where it's like a phone and it splits over, and the screen is actually like the screen is flexible. So it actually is supposed to fold in between. I always thought that was a problem. I never thought that shit would work because, I mean, if you look at anything that you have to fold, paper, plastic, laminate cards and stuff like that, you notice how the indentation causes a problem going back and forth when you fold it, unfold it. I always thought that was going to be a problem. But this one, because it's just two separate screens, it's basically like de facto, it doesn't have that issue. And similar to any computer, like if anybody ever has like a desktop that has two screens on it, you see how your level of productivity just jumps up like 3-4 times fold, because you just got way more real estate to work with. This system, they're talking about this one using Android, because they basically got rid of Windows Phone. Windows Phone.
It was for a season.
I mean they were trying to do something. I want to consider them the OGs, because before iPhone even existed, they had Windows Mobile, and they were kicking off with that. So they were like one of the original smartphones out there. And then iPhone took over, Android is the dominant platform out of all of them, because they're on the most things, and they work just how Windows used to work. Anybody that can make a computer or anybody that can make a phone can throw Windows on it, can throw Android on it.
Yeah.
I mean, so like they basically, Google took the business model. So Microsoft, instead of trying to compete, they just like, you know what, we're going to use y'all. Y'all are open platform. Android is open to anybody that can want to make a copy of Android. So they're essentially just going to make their own version and throw it on this Surface Duo. And like the fact that it looks like a book, that it lays out like a book, that it has the video chat capability, it has the phone app on there, and you know, everybody's getting into all these wireless headsets and whatnot, so it's not like it's going to be too crazy of a device. And they treat it like laptops and stuff. Like they have all these different, what they call different poses on here. If you look at the video, they have all these quote unquote poses that you can put it on, where it sits sideways. You can treat it like a laptop. You can sit it up like a book, and you can just lay it flat like a tablet. And it's all these different things that you can do with it. It's for Microsoft to be doing it is the real pitch, because it's like they're getting out of the software development. They're not making apps anymore. I mean, they're not making the operating system anymore, but they're just making a device. So it's still an Android product, but it's competing against more like Samsung's world. Yes. I mean, it's competing against more like Apple's world, because they're not worried about the device, the software so much. They're just making a real slick device, and they're only going to make one of it. They're not only going to make just this one type. Hopefully they don't come out and make like you know, the Surface Duo S or the Surface Duo X and all of this stuff. They just make this one clean device and sell it to a version 2 comes out type thing. But this is something that I would get. Like, if this comes out, this would be like my next type phone. Like, I'll hold off on getting phones to see what this does.
Yeah, it seems pretty solid, man. I'm actually, it seems like it's something that's going to be, it's going to revolutionize the industry for sure. I think that, that's pretty much it, man. I mean, yeah, I think that there's no the upside or downside to it, man. I think that right now it just comes down to them putting it out there, seeing what the consumer reports will be, man, and then making adjustments, because it always just seems like it's going to be an upgrade, right? Like, what's left? You feel me? Mm-hmm. This is what it is. So, you know, we went from a stage where it was just buttons, you know, playing Snake, you know what I mean, on the thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, all the stuff I had. Now we moved to a space where it was kind of like a little bit of touchscreen but still had buttons. Now we, you know, iPhone XS Max, you know, everything is completely, you know, full screens, almost like definitely holding on like a small computer in your hand. So the next step would be, you know, just as much as like you said, creating like when you have more real estate to do different things, you know. So if they're leading the charge on it, I think it'd be, the sky's the limit for them. You know, honestly, I don't really have any critique about that. I think the only thing I can say is that they got to make sure that when you fold it and unfold it, that the clips don't break. You know what I mean? Like that.
Yeah. I think they can resolve that one. I think they can resolve that issue just because of the, well, I never really had them. I never had like a 2-in-1 laptop where it folds in half or anything like that, where it folds back. So I really can't say how those clips do, like how those hinges do. It looks like the hinge will be solid enough to stay together for like at least a year of usage if nobody damages it. Like if you take care of it, it could live a bulk of its life without any issue to the hinge, but it definitely gotta go through like people a little bit more, because people be coming up with some amazing ways to destroy shit.
Yeah,
man. But that's basically it. I'm really want to see what they do with this and see how they push Samsung out of the market with it, because Samsung was really hoping to make it big with that foldable screen, but nobody, I mean, it's a great looking idea for a technology to have your screen fold and all, but nobody really wants to be able to fold it themselves. Like, put my screen on the side of a coffee mug or something, but don't like make it so I can fold it.
Keep going for a second. Come out. I ain't know that my about to die. You probably edited this out. My laptop already.
Yeah, but we at the end of the cycle anyway, bro. So that's the last article. And like that was really like the weakest of it. That's why I really put it there. But
well, I mean, yeah, I think it's pretty solid. Just closing remarks about that topic, man, is that, I mean, there's really no large form of, I feel like the only large form of, they try to make Bing the default search engine. Don't do that. The shit gonna flop, right? Don't do it. But that's it. I think pretty much, man, we can close it out there, man. Anything else you wanna, jump into to be kind of divulging, or we good?
No. We can stop there. I got some other stuff we're gonna end up talking about. Like I said, it's with Android and the whole thing about Microsoft using Android on in general, and like the fact that Microsoft's about to start using Google Chrome. Like they really using a lot of Google software, and that's the thing that's, I want to see how that unfolds in the next couple of years using somebody else's platform when they used to be the dominant platform, bro.
Right.
They used to be the number ones, and they using somebody else's shit.
Hey man, look, this points to the axiom that, old axiom, that change is inevitable, but growth is a choice. So,
yeah.
Hey, as long as they can continue to, you know, make the right decision to grow, they'd be good. But I think we go ahead and close it out there, man. I think for our guests that have tuned in, like you said, this is the this is Mike Baker. Well, I'm Mike Bennett. This is Mike Baker, my co-host. And just continue to tune in. Stay tuned. We got some more stuff in the tech industry, more commentary and criticisms coming your way of different news that comes out and different sound bites we may come across. Make sure that you like, comment, subscribe, depending on the platform. You know, you may find us on YouTube, Mixer, whatever streaming platform service. Probably find some excerpts with on social media here and there, man. But make sure you like, comment, leave your comments below, and subscribe to our channels. We have more stuff coming your way. That's pretty much it for the Microsoft recap, man. I'm glad we was able to bring some great commentaries your way. That's pretty much it. Stay tuned.
Yeah, see you.